Good to be with you all this morning. My name is Pastor Aaron. I'm the youth pastor here at Bentonville Community Church, and we're glad that you've chosen to worship with us today. And Pastor Mark's away this morning preaching a revival, and so if you would, just pray for him this morning as we go throughout our service as he wraps up a revival in Joplin today. How many of you, let me ask you this, we're going to jump right in. How many of you are a fan, and I'm going to ask for participation, crowd participation here. How many of you are fans or like superheroes of any kind? Anybody? Superheroes out there? Okay. Like, not very many of you, and that's okay. That's all right. I expected a little bit more than that. But that's okay, because as a kid, I loved superheroes, okay? As a kid, I absolutely loved superheroes. They were, like, the best thing about being alive was that there was this awesome TV shows and cool things going on with superheroes. One of my earliest memories of being, like, obsessed with superheroes is Batman, okay? And specifically, the TV show with Adam West here. Here he is right here. Yeah, Batman's come a long way. Let me just say, Batman has come a long way in our culture. But I remember, like, waking up, I would watch these, they were reruns, and they would just come on, and I remember I just loved it. Like, it was the cheesiest, corny, like, looking back now, I'm like, wow, that was, like, really bad. But I loved it, right? It was amazing. It was amazing. But my other favorite, and quickly followed, and I still have these DVDs because they really are some of my favorites, is Superman. Superman was the end-all, be-all for me, okay? So growing up, Christopher Reeve right here portrayed Superman, and I have Superman 1 and 2 still on DVD, and shamelessly, yes, I watch them every now and again, and it's a good time. But I love these superheroes. Like, I loved them. I would put them on, and I would watch them over and over again, right? I would put them on and watch them over and over again. And one of the things that you need to know about Superman, and I'm going to talk about Superman for just a second. Superman does not come from Earth, right? So he's not from Earth. He's from a planet. Anybody? Anybody? There we go. Okay, so some of you are bigger fans than what you admitted earlier, okay? So, yeah, so he comes from the planet Krypton, okay? He comes from this planet, and he is sent here. He is escaping. Like, he's a refugee, okay? He is sent here by his parents in this spaceship as a baby, and it's really kind of a crazy story. And he gets here, and he's raised on a farm in the middle of Kansas. That's crazy too, right? He's raised on a farm in the middle of Kansas, and to these farmer parents, and one day he finds out kind of who he really is, right? He kind of finds out who he is, and how does he do that? Well, you see his father, Jor-El, okay? I'm going to go real nerd on you. Jor-El, he sends with him these crystals that contain, like, the knowledge and the history of what happened to their planet. And it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool story. But there's this moment where Superman, Clark Kent, he realizes that he is not from Earth. He is a resident alien. He is a resident alien, okay? He is not from here. Now, we've been going through this series on exile, and really what it means to be an exile is to be a resident alien. You don't necessarily live in your homeland anymore. You're somewhere else. You're experiencing a different culture, experiencing different things, and it is a much different experience than what you had back home, right? So you can imagine the Israelites, and we've been talking about Daniel, and we've been talking about how when they were taken into exile to Babylon, that they were forced into these different customs, these different cultures and different things. And there were points along the way where, you know, they stood up for their faith and they did things according to the Israelite culture. But I wanted to tell you the story of Superman because I think he best illustrates for us in a context that we can kind of understand today. He kind of best illustrates maybe what it looks like to be a resident alien. To be a resident alien, did you know that you are a resident alien? I think that's the first thing, right? That's the first thing we need to think about is, did you know this morning that you are a resident alien? As a Christian, well, you may be saying, yeah, I'm an American. I've lived in Arkansas my whole life, so how could I be a resident alien? But as a Christian living in today's culture, in a post-Christian culture like we've been talking about, you are, in fact, a resident alien. You stand for things, you stand for values and things like that that are different, opposed to our culture that surrounds us. And so this morning, I think that's the first thing we need to realize is that We are, in fact, resident aliens. Like, we're not part of this world, right? We're not part of this world that surrounds us and that we participate in the culture of. In fact, the culture we have should resemble something different. We've been talking about where the church in America is today over the last several weeks. And the truth is that we are living in exile. It has happened slowly, right, and over time. I think it's kind of been one of these slow processes, and then all of a sudden it kind of maybe lulled us to sleep a little bit. The truth is that we are living in exile. It has happened slowly and over time, and we have been lulled into thinking that we are still home, right? We're still home here. However, the reality is that we are much like the characters that we've been talking about with Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These characters, these guys that have been taken from their homeland, we're much more like them than we are otherwise. We're much more like them than we are Babylonian, or we should be. We should be. So there is so much to think about today when it comes to being a parent in this culture. We're going to talk a little bit today about what it looks like to raise resident aliens. Did you know that you are raising resident aliens? So the first question, did you know that you are? And the second question is, moms and dads, grandparents, families, people out there, did you know that our generation of kids that we have today, they are resident aliens, and that it is our job to raise them up as resident aliens? It's a hard question, right? It's one of the hardest things, I think, about being in exile. It's one of the most difficult things about being in exile is raising resident aliens. Because, as you know, the culture surrounds us. It surrounds you at your workplace. It surrounds our students at their schools. It surrounds our kids at their schools. It's everywhere, right? And so we have to figure out and navigate what it looks like to be a resident alien, and then we have to figure out what it look like to raise resident aliens in this culture. There's a lot of responsibility as a parent. You guys know this. I'm not telling you something you don't know, but there is a ton of responsibility that comes along with being a parent. I'll never forget, I remember whenever Carly was pregnant with Brody, and I remember thinking about, we were so excited, you know, we were young and naive, we didn't know what we were really getting into, I just remember this moment, though. There was this moment where I realized how much responsibility was really on me, and hang with me, I know this is kind of silly, okay, but I had this moment where I remember thinking about my son and him coming, and the responsibility of raising him and teaching him things, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, I could really screw this kid up. Like, I had this moment all of a sudden, and I came out of nowhere, and it just kind of said, wow, like, this is a huge responsibility. This is a huge responsibility. I remember specifically thinking, I could really screw him up. I could tell him that green is really blue, and he would believe me. Like he would have this moment. And yes, maybe eventually as he went to school and teachers taught that out of him. But in the back of his mind, it would always be this thing like, well, Dad told me that that was really something different. That's how much power and influence you have as a parent. And that's how much responsibility you have as a parent. And like I said, I know that's a silly story, but the responsibility that we have is a heavy one. It's heavy. It is a burden almost at some times, right? It's kind of like, wow, Lord, like you've entrusted these people to me to teach them, to help them learn, to help them figure out life, help them learn about who you are. And as Christians, we have the added responsibility of instilling Christ into our children. As you may have guessed, this is difficult to do in the middle of a culture that does not always reflect Christ. So the question is then, how do we do this? How do we do this? How do we go about even instilling Christ? How do we go about raising resident aliens? It's not easy, right? As we mentioned, in fact, I think it is one of the hardest things about being in exile. Lucky for us, we have Scripture, right? Lucky for us, we have Scripture. And today, we're going to look at a couple of different Scriptures. The first one, we're going to be in the book of Deuteronomy. Okay, so in the Old Testament, there's this verse, and it really kind of forms and shapes a lot of my own personal philosophy about ministry, as well as I know Pastor Diane, we've had conversations about this. So what you're hearing from us this morning is something that we feel is very important, okay? But Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9, and it says this. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them upon your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." Did you catch the responsibility there in verse 7? In verse 7 it says, impress them upon your children. It's a very clear commandment, right? Very clear commandment from God. Hey, impress them upon your children. Teach them these things, right? Teach them these things. It's the job of the community of believers gathered here today to teach our kids to be resident aliens. It's our responsibility, all of us, right? Every one of us has a hand in this. It's our responsibility to raise resident aliens. And like I said earlier, it is heavy. It's not easy. And it's a heavy thing to do, but it is what we're asked to do. How many of you guys, I know that we've been here together, and one of my favorite things, and maybe this is one of your favorite things too, one of my favorite things that we do as a church is baby dedications. It's one of my absolute favorite things that we do, because we get a chance not only to like gawk over this new life that's before us, like that's awesome, and I love doing that as well. We just did this a few months ago with our son, Brecken. And one of my favorite things about that ritual that we do is the fact that we get to come together as a congregation and really kind of affirm that child, affirm that family. We get to come around them and say, yes, we're going to be there for you. We get to come and one of the best sounds is whenever, you know, Pastor Mark gives this list of things and he asks the congregation to respond and say, we will, and to hear that back as a parent, man, that feels good. It feels good to know that I'm not walking this load and I don't have to share all of this responsibility on my own, but that there are others, that there's a community of believers that have come alongside me, that have chosen to be there and walk with me down this road. And that's one of the reasons that I love that. Here's the thing, though, with that ceremony. I think lots of times we end up saying we will because it's what he asked us to say. We end up saying we will. If this is not a time, I'm telling you right now, this is not a time where we just need to go through the motions as a congregation, but this is a time that we need to be truthful in what we say. And when we say we will, we need to follow through on that. And we'll talk more about that in a second. And this scripture is speaking to the entire community, but part of that community is you, mom and dad. Part of that community is you. In fact, I would say that moms and dads are the primary faith influencers of their kids' lives. Mom and dad, you are the primary faith influencer of your kids. Now, I know some of you may be thinking, in your mind this morning, you may be thinking, well, you know, Pastor Aaron, you're the youth pastor. So didn't we hire you to do that? Or didn't we hire Pastor Diane? She's an awesome children's pastor, and we're glad to have her, and she is amazing. And we're so happy to have her here. But I'm here to tell you that while that's part of our responsibility, the majority, the primary faith influencers in kids' lives are mom and dad. Sometimes that's a tough pill to swallow. Sometimes that's a tough pill to swallow, and I'm here to say I get that. I know that, right? Pastor Diane and I are here because we're passionate about seeing young people follow Jesus, and we're passionate about walking alongside them in that journey. But we also know that we only get 1 to 2 hours a week with them. And even those 1 to 2 hours a week are dictated by schedules kept by you, the parent. So I don't say this to say that you should or should not have your kids involved in children's or student ministries, though I would certainly suggest that you do. I say this to say to you that you, as the mom and dad, have to be the one to lead the way. If we're going to raise resident aliens here in this church, moms and dads have to be the primary faith influencers of their families. We live in a culture, like I said, that is, we are bombarded by things that are outside of God all the time. All the time. We're going to walk out of this place this morning, and we're going to have something hit us somewhere along the way that is certainly not what God wants for our culture. It's, if you want to label it secular, that's fine. Whatever you want to label that as, that's fine. But it is our responsibility to then counteract that as moms and dads and teach our kids what it means to be a resident alien. When it comes to discipling our kids, I hope that you're taking time as mom and dad to just maybe do little things. It doesn't have to be, I'm not telling you you have to know everything about the Bible to be the primary faith influencer. That's not what I'm here to say this morning. I'm not here to say that you have to have all the answers. You don't have to have all the answers. But you have to be willing to walk with your students and with your kids. You have to be willing to put on that burden and say, okay, I'm going to have to set this example. I'm going to have to do some things that are maybe out of my comfort zone and that maybe fly in the face of our culture in order to set this example so that my son or my daughter is able to see what that looks like to live out your faith in this world. Last week, one of our general superintendents of the Church of the Nazarene, David Busick, awesome dude, he has some great things to say, and I've enjoyed listening to his messages, and I'm excited he's going to be here for our dedication service of the new building, and we're excited about that. But he tweeted out something this week, this past week. He said this. He said, faith is nurtured primarily in the home. The average parent has 75 times more hours per year in the life of a child than a church leader. 75 times more hours per year. So while, yes, we, Pastor Diane and I, think it's important that you have your kids and your students in student ministries and kids ministries so that we can be around them and put people around them, you, as mom and dad, have 75 times more time per year. Now, I realize some of that time is split by school and some other things, but that's a big responsibility. It's a huge responsibility. 75 times. So keeping that in mind, all of us want the good life for our kids. That's a pretty universal thing. Like, we all can say that, yeah, you know, I want the good life for my kids. I want the good life for my kids. But the many versions of the good life may overlap and compete with what it means to be a person committed to Christ. And that's a tough pill to swallow this morning. As I was doing some research and as I was thinking about this, I kept thinking about, yeah, I want the good life for my kids. And I do. I want the best for them. I want Brody and Peyton and Brecken, I want them to know the good life. And I think most of us as parents can agree, like, we want our kids to have better lives than we did. We want them to have it all. We want the perfect life for them. But I think sometimes as parents, we spin our wheels and we do these different things that there's a lot of different versions of the good life out there, by the way, right? A lot of different versions of what the good life is. And our culture is offering versions of the good life that slowly chip away at the version that is centered around Christ. And raising a resident alien means that we must identify those and make sure that our commitments are Christ-centered. Moms and dads, you are the ones that have to set that example. You are the ones that have to set that example. And regardless of what your kids do or say, they do look to you as that example. They may not communicate that to you. They may verbally, non-verbally communicate to you that they don't want you around and that they don't look to you as an example. But the truth of the matter is they do. They do. They look to you to see what that looks like. So the onus for us as parents is, okay, my kids are looking at me, they're watching me. What am I doing to set a Christ-centered example? What am I doing to set a Christ-centered example? What am I putting as priority on my calendar for my kids? What am I putting as priority? Am I putting this thing that's maybe not Christ-centered, am I putting it at the top? And then maybe we'll go to church after that, or I don't know. One of the interesting things that I've heard recently was that for you as a parent, what the minimum is for church attendance for you as a parent is what the maximum will be for your kids. That hits me. I don't know if it hits you or not, but that hits me. Whatever you choose as the minimum for your kids as far as it is church attendance or involvement in a faith community, whatever that minimum is for you will be the maximum for your kids. And yeah, that can be scary. But I say that to say this, how you spend your time you have with your kids matters. How you spend the time that you have with your kids matters. It's important. It's really important. And I have a quick illustration that I want to share with you. So give me just a second. I'm going to pull this table out here. I saw this example from a guy named Reggie Joyner. I like Reggie. He's a good guy. So under here, I have some different things, okay? First thing I have is this. This is a cup. It's full of these little beads, marbles, whatever you want to call them. And this is representative of how much time you have with your kids from birth to age 18. From birth to age 18, you have 936 weeks. There are 932 beads in this glass jar. Carly counted them all. 936 in this jar. So that's representative of the time you have from birth till the time they are 18. They begin making a lot of their own decisions, and they begin making these monumental, life-changing decisions, and things are different once they turn 18. So that's that. If you have this morning, if you have a 9-year-old, this is how many weeks you have left. This is how many weeks you have left right here. You have 468 weeks until they turn 18. So just for perspective, birth, 9 years old, okay? If this morning you have a 16-year-old, that's what you have left. That's what you have left. There are 104 weeks left from the time they turn 16 to the time they turn 18. There are 104 weeks that you have to set the example, to be the primary faith influencer in your kids' lives. And I don't share that with you this morning because I want to scare you or anything like that, but I want you to know that the time you have absolutely matters. And that no matter where you are on this scale, no matter where you are, there's still time left. There's still time left. It doesn't matter if you have a kid that was just born, if you have a 9-year-old, if you have a 16-year-old, there are still beads left in the jar. Please use that time to set that example for your kids. Use the time you have with them. Use that time in order to leverage Christ, in order to set the example. Maybe that means on the way to whatever it is that you're going to, you guys just have a quick conversation in the car about what your faith journey looks like. I don't know what that looks like, but in order to raise resident aliens, we all have to have a particular story. A story that constantly forms them. If your family's like mine, there are certain stories that are like embody what it means to be in your family. So for me, I'll tell you just a quick example. And once again, I'm really the king of silly examples. So this one's silly as well. But there are stories in each of your families that get told over and over and over and over and over again, right? And they just get told all the time until your kids know the stories, everyone in the family, you can start the story, and everybody knows how it's going to end, right? Because they've heard the story over and over. So for me and my family, there was this one time, I don't remember how old I was. I was probably 6 or 7, I don't know. But we were gathered together as a family, and we were celebrating something together. So my grandparents were there, aunts, uncles, cousins, it was probably a birthday. We had birthday parties and things like that. So we were celebrating, and it was a summer day, so we had some homemade vanilla ice cream. Anybody homemade ice cream fans out there? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's awesome, right? It's amazing. So we're dishing out this homemade ice cream, and we're having a good time together. And everybody's kind of just, they're taking bites of this ice cream, and they're like, something couldn't quite taste right in this ice cream. But nobody's really saying anything. My Aunt Kathy, she was the one that made the ice cream. And so she dishes herself out finally some, and she sits down and she takes a bite, and she's like, does everybody's taste like this kind of thing? And come to realize, like, she went and found out that she had used sour milk in the ice cream. Right? Come to find out. Well, me being the sweet little boy I was, I told Aunt Kathy, I said, Aunt Kathy, this is the best ice cream I've ever had. And so now every time that there is any kind of ice cream served at any event that we do as a family, there's always the joke of, hey, Aaron, is this the best ice cream you've ever had? Right? But these are the kind of stories, and if your family's like mine, you have these kind of stories, these things that everyone remembers, that they get brought up all the time, and those are just part of what it means to be in that family. But the same is true for us as Christians, right? Here in just a few short weeks, we're getting ready to retell the story of the birth of Christ. We're getting ready to retell that story, and we're going to do it every year because it's important, right? Because it's part of who we are as Christians. We celebrate the birth of Christ. And some of your kids, you know, you might sit down to tell that story again, and some of your kids may roll their eyes, and they may say, oh my gosh, we're going to read that story again. We're going to talk about that again, Dad. They may sit down, they may say that, but I'm going to tell you right now, keep telling that story. Don't stop telling that story. It's important. That's part of what it means to set the example, and that's part of what it means to continue to tell the story of Christ, the story of God, over and over. Keep sharing it and marveling at the greatest gift that anyone could have ever asked for. Keep telling that story. And this is not only true of the stories we see of the Bible, but it's true of your personal story and your personal journey as well. Tell your kids the stories of what God has done in your life. Don't be afraid to tell them what God has done and how he has moved. Don't be afraid of that. Be ready to share that with your kids. Be ready to share that with them. Today we're going to look at another scripture in Joshua chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. And it says this. It says, when all the people had crossed the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, now choose 12 men, one from each tribe. Tell them, take 12 stones from the very place where the priests are standing in the middle of the Jordan. Carry them out and pile them up at a place where you will camp tonight. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had chosen, one from each tribe. He told them, go into the middle of the Jordan in front of the ark of the Lord your God. Each of you must pick up one stone and carry it to the shoulder, or carry it on your shoulder. 12 stones in all, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. We will use these stones to build a memorial. In the future, your children will ask you, what do these stones mean? Then you can tell them, they remind us that the Jordan River stopped flowing when the Ark of the Lord's Covenant went across. These stories will stand as memorial among the people of Israel forever. Our stories are important. We talked about how much time we have left, and there's plenty of time to be able to share your story with your kids. I want to encourage you in that. I want to ask that you would take some time, share your story. Share your story with your kids. Don't be afraid. They need to know what it looked like for you to find faith. They need to know that. They need to know what it looked like. Because here's the deal. There's a lot of times where I see and I hear from students and they feel like they walk through things by themselves. They feel like nobody else understands exactly what it is they're going through. And the reality is that most of us have probably experienced at one time or another something, some semblance of what they're going through. But they don't know that because we don't do a good job of sharing our stories. We don't do a good job of sharing our stories. So today, and this is a challenge for every family represented in this room, if you have not, and even if you have, do it again. Tell your kids how it was that you came to Christ. Take some time at lunch today. Take some time and just say, hey, you know what? I need to tell you. I don't think I've ever told you. Here's how I came to know Jesus. And maybe for you, maybe that's a story that went through some doubt. Maybe there's a story out there that you went through some questioning and some time where you're like, I don't know if this whole Jesus thing is real. But I'm here to tell you that your students have probably experienced that as well. Your kids have probably experienced that as well. And so be real with them, be honest with them, share with them your story. And maybe it's not complete. Maybe you don't know Jesus yet. Maybe you're still testing the waters. You're still kicking the tires on it. First of all, I want to encourage you this morning to come know him quickly. Get to know him. Get to know his love, his kindness, and his mercy. I promise it will change your life. It will change your life. It's critical that our children understand why these stories shape the decisions that we make about how we spend money, time, and make important decisions in our lives. There's part of your story that shapes why you do the things that you do, right? It's important that we share those stories with our kids, that we let them see those things. And parents, I told you that raising resident aliens is difficult, but I also think it's important to circle back to the community that I spoke of a little bit ago. I don't want this to be just a story focused right at parents, because this is a story, this is a sermon for all of us. As a community of believers. When we look back at our passage from Deuteronomy, the very first words tell us that we're not alone, okay? The very first words of that passage are, "Hear, O Israel." This isn't just a command to individual parents. It's a command to an entire community of people. Hear, O Israel. Hear, Bentonville Community Church. This responsibility of raising resident aliens is not for parents alone. It's not for parents alone. That's why we do things like kids ministry and student ministry. In ministry, we used to use ratios like 5 kids to 1 adult. But what if we flipped that ratio? What if we flipped that ratio and instead we said every single kid needs 5 adults that care about them and pour into their lives? You see, research shows us that kids are most likely to walk with Jesus into adulthood when they grow up among a group of Christ-following adults. So it's not just on you, parents. It's on us, Bentonville Community Church. And yeah, I know we've got volunteers that come with us and help us out in student ministry and kids ministry, and that's awesome. We could always use more, by the way. But maybe you're not necessarily volunteering in one of those 2 spots, but I want to encourage you this morning, whether you're involved in kids ministry or student ministry or not, find a kid and pour into their lives because they need it. They need to see caring adults around them. They need to see more than just mom and dad that cares about them. They need to see a church that cares about them and it cares about their spiritual development. It's the responsibility of us as a group. That means that you have a responsibility to these students right down here in the front. They sit there every week. Sometimes they're goofing off. That's all right. Sometimes they're knuckleheads. Sometimes they say things really profound. But it's our responsibility to show them how to live life. It's our responsibility, church. It's our responsibility to come alongside them. and show them what it means to be a resident alien. Show them what it means to live in exile and still be a Christian, still be a Christ follower, even when the odds seem stacked against us. So I know I mentioned the baby dedications earlier, and Mark asks, Pastor Mark asks, if you're willing to kind of, he says this kind of tongue-in-cheek, he kind of goes off script when he says this. But he says, if you're willing to serve in the nursery or go to teen camp or et cetera. He says those things in that baby dedication ceremony. And lots of times we laugh at that and we think, oh, that's so funny, Pastor Mark, you're silly. But I want you to know he's serious about that when he says that. Because our kids need us. They need to see that example. They need to see a caring and loving adult that's going to come alongside them and pick them up when they're feeling down and just wrap their arms around them, give them a hug when they need one. He's absolutely serious when he says that. Our kids need you. There's so many negative influences around them. There's a culture that bombards them every single day when they walk into the halls of a school. Or if they're just out at Walmart. It doesn't matter where they are. There's a negative vibe that surrounds our kids, that surrounds all of us at all times. And so how awesome would it be if you and I chose to be the positive voice in the middle of that? We have that opportunity as a community of believers. And as I said, there's kids all along the way. There's some kids that they've only got 104 weeks left, right? They've only got 104 weeks left until they're out on their own, making their own decisions, deciding on their own for the first time maybe ever that whether or not they're going to be a part of a faith community or not. Take some time as us. Let's take some time and let's pour back into our kids. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. As they do so, I just want to give you reminders of what it looks like to be a resident alien. It means being uncomfortable sometimes. It means standing up for what is right, what is good, what is true, even when the rest of the world around us says something to the contrary. It's hard, you guys. I started this thing off and I said, raising resident aliens is probably the most difficult thing you can do in exile. Can you imagine what it was like for these parents that, from what we know, Daniel's parents probably did not go with him to exile. Probably didn't. They were probably left behind. At that point, they're just trusting that what they did was enough, that they wouldn't slowly just be assimilated into this other culture. And that's really the danger of what we have today. The danger is not an overt thing. It's a very slow process. It's an assimilation process that we begin to make compromises on what we believe. We begin to, oh, that's not that bad. I want to encourage you this morning, don't make those compromises. Stand up for what's right. Do the right thing. Share your story with your kids. It will change their lives and it will give them a greater chance of walking with Jesus for longer. It takes an effort by all of us. Don't forget what I said today, lunchtime. Share your story with your kids. Don't be afraid of it. If you've never shared your story before, that's okay. It just takes being honest and real. Because here's the other thing. Kids and students can sniff out a phony like 10 miles away. So don't be something that you're not. Be real, be honest with your story. Be authentic and live an authentic faith in front of them.